I want to welcome you to the middle of what is a 12-week series called Freedom, the Joy of a Heart Set Free by Jesus. We are on week 9 of this 12-week series, and it's been 12 weeks of learning to experience the joy of a heart set free by Jesus. I want to read these words that we've read every week from Jesus. This is his mission statement. This is him reading from the scroll of Isaiah. He reads this: "The Spirit of the Lord is on me because he's anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He sent me to proclaim freedom for the prisoners and recovery of sight for the blind, to set the oppressed free, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor." Do you hear how much freedom is part of Jesus' mission statement? And we believe that Jesus is here, that he is in this room now, and that he is moving in the room to set people free. So for 12 weeks, we're on this journey, walking through the 12 steps outlined in Alcoholics Anonymous, using these steps as a map. But as I've said every week, we want to be deep in Scripture. We want to be anchored in community. We want to be dependent on the Holy Spirit. And we want to be grounded in the gospel. For the last number of weeks, we've been inviting Jesus to come and move in power and in love and with so much grace. And as we've said each week, that the key to this journey is to be in community, to be part of an apprentice group, a group of 3 to 4 people who part of the same, you know, same gender, who are working together to confess sin, to pray for one another. You cannot do this journey of freedom alone. And so I just want to say thank you to all the groups who are meeting, who are being open and vulnerable, and the courage that you've had to be open about some inner stuff that's really hard to talk about. And it's been encouraging for me. I just want to tell you, even after this first service, just to hear stories of people saying that God has been meeting them through this journey, stories where people are beginning to experience some freedom in their life, especially after steps 4 and 5, where there's been some openness and some confession about things going on in their heart. And so that encourages me so much. It encourages our team so much just to know, okay, God is moving, God is working. So thank you to all of you who've shared those stories. What I want to do right now is, if this is your first Sunday, I want to recap a little bit of where we've been, so you hear a little bit of the journey we've been on. So in the last 8 weeks, we looked at step 1, where we were honest about our problems. Step 2, where we came to believe God could set us free. Step 3, when we surrendered to God. Step 4, where we made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Step 5, where we stepped into the light and admitted our wrongs to another person. Step 5, am I right? That was hard. Step 6, we became ready for God to remove our defects of character. Step 7, we humbly asked God to remove our shortcomings. And last week, step 8, we made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Today, we'll move on to step 9, but as we do, hear the promise from the Apostle Paul. Now, the Lord is the Spirit. And where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is freedom. And we all, who with unveiled faces contemplate the Lord's glory, are being transformed into his image. North Langley, pause right there. You are being transformed into the image of Christ with ever-increasing glory, which comes from the Lord, who is the Spirit. So, Spirit of the living God, you're here. Move in the room. Set your people free. We love you, and we place our lives before you once again, and pray that in the coming minutes, you would so move in us that you would give us the courage to make things right with those we've hurt. This is not an easy step. It will require so much grace and strength from you to do this. And so we come clinging to you. We love you. Set us free. Amen. Well, where are you and I experiencing a powerlessness? Where are we addicted? And where are we struggling to forgive? Where do we feel stuck? Today we move on to step 9, which is apologizing. Step 9, apologizing. I want to let you know that I'm going to take some about 35 minutes to basically say one basic thing. And so really, I'm about to waste your time for 35 minutes because everything I'm about to say is going to be this. It's time to apologize to someone you've hurt. Dot, dot, dot. No, really, it's time to do it. Dot, dot, dot. You should do it now. It's going to be a repetition of that same idea. So who's excited about that? You ready? Okay, you got an extra hour of sleep, so you're ready. Okay, step 9, apologizing. Last week in step 8, we made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. So here's what we did last week. We wrote a list of people we've hurt financially, emotionally, physically. We wrote a list of people who have had to deal with us at our worst. The people that have had to put up with our pride, our narcissism, our selfishness, our ego. We wrote a list of those who have had to listen to our excuses over and over again. We wrote a list of people that we've lied to, people we've ignored, forgotten, or left high and dry. We wrote a list of people who have loved us, yet we have turned away from them. Why? Why did we write this down? Why do we need this step? Well, because, as we've mentioned before in this series, we're trying to clean our side of the street. I cannot clean your side of the street, but by the power of Christ, I can clean my side of the street. We're trying to take responsibility for the things we've done. You see, the things that we reach out to, our addictions, our habits, the things we're not proud of, the way we think and speak, the way we spend, the way we spend our time, the way we escape into certain unhelpful ways of escaping from the world, that these things are the tip of the iceberg. But when we look under the surface of the water, what we'll find is in steps 4 and 5, a bunch of stuff that we've done that we're not proud of, but we'll also find broken relationships. Relationships where we've maybe said some things or done some things or hurt some people. And we believe that freedom, and this is the way God works, is that when we are set free from the guilt or the shame, when we take ownership of our part, that there is a healing that happens within us, which will make us less likely to reach out for comfort to that thing that we're addicted to or the habit we're not proud of. Does that make sense? So what we're doing is we're going under the surface to try to say, let's get these broken relationships healed. Because maybe this is part of why we're reaching out to do the things we're not proud of. So here in step 9, we're called to take the next step and do the following. Step 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Make direct amends. Apologize. That means going to the people we've hurt to say, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Who is ready for this step? Woohoo! One of my favorite films of all time is the movie The Mission. The Mission, starring Robert De Niro, Jeremy Irons, Liam Neeson, came out in 1986. How many of you love the movie The Mission? Yes, there's even clapping involved. Yes, I love that. Well, for the about 10 of you that raise your hand, you are my favorite people in the world. Here, let me tell you the story, because most of you did not raise your hands, but you really should check out this film. It's amazing. Robert De Niro plays a captain from Spain named Mendoza, Captain Mendoza, and he's a conquistador. So, the Spanish armies have moved into Latin America and are enslaving the native tribes of those who live in an area in Brazil, Paraguay, Argentina, around the Iguazu Falls, if you know that area geographically. And it's the story of this slave trader. Captain Mendoza, for years, had been taking the Guarani tribe. Some of you know the famous Guarani tribe, that taking Guarani people into slavery and benefiting financially from the slave trade. Well, after a crisis in his life, kind of falls apart through a series of circumstances. But he knows he has to apologize to the Guarani. He knows the pain he has brought into their lives, the devastation he's brought into their lives. So in this act of showing remorse, what he does is he carries this load of metal, like shields and swords. It's this heavy kind of bundle of metal that he carries up the mountain. And what he's trying to do is he's trying to make penance for all the evil that he has done. And the weight of his sin is literally on his shoulders. Mendoza finally shows up to the Guarani village carrying this load. And he's muddy and he's in pain. And he shows up to this village, this Guarani village, as a broken man. He's on his knees. This slave trader who profited financially is now on his knees in the mud. He's broken. His body showing how sorry he is for what he had done to this tribe. But in the end, the fascinating thing, it's not the penance that heals him. It's the forgiveness he experiences by the Guarani tribe. And there's a powerful moment when a man from the tribe cuts off the burden from his shoulders, literally with a knife, cuts off the burden that he had been carrying. And Mendoza sits there in the mud, being embraced by the Guarani tribe with tears of freedom. And I think there's a picture here of that. Just he's weeping with joy because the tribe he had once enslaved has forgiven him. I think it's one of the most powerful pictures of reconciliation, restoration, forgiveness in film. You see, there's a burden we've been carrying for so long. And if we're honest, we've hurt others. And this thing that we're trying to get free from is weighing us down. This habit, this addiction, this state of mind, these feelings that are not right. These things have hurt others. If we're honest, we've hurt others. But what if the weight of what we're carrying could be cut off? What if the person we've hurt or the people we've hurt could forgive us? I want to say this. There is no promise that the person will forgive us. I want to be clear. That is not what this sermon is about. But here's the deal. We don't even have a chance to experience what Mendoza experienced. We don't have a chance of being forgiven unless we take the humble step to apologize for our part. And here's the deal. Even if the person we've hurt is not ready to forgive us, what would it feel like to apologize? What would it feel like to get it out in the open and apologize for our part in hurting them? There is no guarantee of what that person is going to do or say or how they'll react. Mendoza could have been killed by coming into that village. But he knew he had to come in humility to apologize. And we have to do the same. There is a freedom when we clean our side of the street. Jesus gives us some great advice when we know that we've hurt someone. And I want to share with you one of the most brilliant, in my opinion, one of the teachings of Jesus that I find absolutely incredible. It's one of my favorite passages from Jesus. And it's in his Sermon on the Mount, Matthew chapter 5. If you brought your Bible, you can turn to Matthew chapter 5. Matthew chapter 5, verses 21 to 24. I'm going to read it here. But the context is that Jesus has gathered his followers up on a hillside, and he's showing them how to live the life of the kingdom of God. He's welcomed them as followers into the kingdom, the place where God is king. And Jesus is showing his followers how to live. And the amazing thing about Jesus is he's incredibly practical when it comes to how to live. And so in Matthew chapter 5, verses 21 to 24, we read Jesus describe how to do step 9. Starting in verse 21. Jesus said, "You've heard it was said to the people long ago, 'You shall not murder, and anyone who murders will be subject to judgment.' But I tell you that anyone who is angry with a brother or sister will be subject to judgment. Again, anyone who says to a brother or sister, Raca, is answerable to the court. And anyone who says, you fool, will be in danger of the fire of hell. Therefore, if you're offering your gift at the altar, and there remember that your brother or sister has something against you, leave your gift there in front of the altar. First go and be reconciled to them, then come and offer your gift. This is the word of the Lord. All right. Well, let's dive into Jesus' words here on how to apologize and how to make amends. All right. He says, you've heard it was said to people long ago, you shall not murder, and anyone who murders will be subject to judgment. What's he referring to? Well, he's talking to Jewish people, and he knows that they know the Ten Commandments. Even if you're new to Jesus here today, I'm sure you've heard of the Ten Commandments. Commandment number 6 says, you shall not murder. Exodus 20, verse 13. This is a good law. Hey, I mean, that's a great law. You shall not murder. This is good. We like that law. It's good for civilizations to have that law in place. But Jesus is going to raise the bar. He's going to say, listen, if your community is known for just not murdering, that's a pretty low bar, okay? So what we're going to do is I'm going to show you God's heart. He says, I tell you, anyone who is angry with a brother or sister will be subject to judgment. And, sorry, just a second. I'm back. Anyone who is angry will be subject to judgment. This is interesting. Anger. He's saying, you think like being a good person is like not murdering. Let's talk about anger for a second. Again, anyone who says to a brother or sister, Raca, is answerable to the court. And anyone who says, you fool, will be in danger of the fire of hell. Whoa. Okay. So here's the deal. When it comes to the word anger, there are two Greek words that, Jesus wasn't speaking in Greek. He was speaking in Aramaic. But when they wrote these words down in Greek, there's two potential Greek words that could have been used. Thumos is the Greek word for anger that means like quick anger. It's an immediately like flame of rage, right? But there's another Greek word, and it's orge. Orge is this deep-seated anger that's been churning deep in the soul. Orge. And the word that's used here is orge. Right? This is this deep-seated anger that's just been like inside of you for a long time. The interesting thing is when we read the New Testament, we see that not all anger is sinful. Some of you remember the righteous anger that Jesus has when he clears the temple in Jerusalem of the money changers, the people who were doing unjust things in God's house, right? And so there seems to be an anger that doesn't lead to sin. It's a righteous anger. And so in Ephesians 4, Paul writes, in your anger, do not sin. In your anger, do not sin. So there is a kind of anger that is not sinful, but this anger is leading to sin. This orge anger, I mean, it's that deep-seated anger that's leading us to sin mentally. And there are these a couple insults in this passage, right? You see the word raca? Raca means fool or idiot. It's related to the Aramaic term for empty. It's like you're an empty-headed person, right? It's an insult. And there's a public insult here too. You fool. You're a fool. Now, why is Jesus concerned about these insults? Well, in all of these, Jesus is saying, listen, man, you're crossing a line. You're crossing a line. God made that person in his image. They are his creation. So are you. But when you, out of that deep orge anger, when you call someone those terms, you've crossed a line. You've crossed a line and you are dehumanizing them. But this person is made in the image of God. That's a line you cannot cross. So, the heat of the human heart brings this judgment upon our life. Do you notice in the passage, Jesus is saying there's all kinds of judgment here. I mean, from God, from yourself, even from the courts. So there's a better way to live, says Jesus. There's a better way to live. And so what he says in verse 23, he tells us what to do. He's a good teacher. He says, therefore, if you're offering your gift at the altar, and there remember that your brother or sister has something against you. We'll come back to that little phrase in a second. Something against you. Leave your gift there in front of the altar. First go and be reconciled to them, then come offer your gift. Okay, Jesus is brilliant. His answer here is to practice reconciliation. He's saying, listen, when there's this orge type of anger deep within you guys, practice reconciliation. This is not going to be easy, but here's what I want my disciples to do. This is what Jesus is saying, right? Here's what I want you to do. I want you to make amends. Step 9, as it were, right? Now, as we look into the step, the incredible thing is that someone is worshiping in the temple in Jerusalem. Okay, so set the stage. This is the stage Jesus is setting. He's saying, imagine this person, they've traveled to the city of Jerusalem. They've now come to the center of the city, which is the temple. And there they are, they're at the altar, and they're offering some kind of gift for God on the altar. Do you guys all have that mental picture in your mind? This person is there in the temple, ready, he's offering the gift, and it's there, mid-worship, okay? That they somehow remember, we don't know how, but they somehow comes to mind this broken relationship that they have. They remember that somebody has something against them. Note, someone has something against you. It means someone was hurt by you. And we don't know, like, you're like mid-worship at the temple in Jerusalem. You have something on the altar. And then you're like, right, Bob hates my guts. You know? And so you're just like, oh no, what do I do about Bob? But you're in the middle of worship. Well, this is awkward. Well, Jesus tells you, well, here's what you're going to do. You're going to stop worshiping. It's wild to hear him say this. Stop worshiping and go pursue reconciliation. Leave the worship. Reconciliation takes priority over worship. Now imagine you're from Galilee. This is where Jesus was from. And if you're from Galilee, you have had to travel 3 days to get to Jerusalem. And you're like, okay, I'm mid-worship here. I'm in the temple. Let's just like polish this thing off real quick. I'll talk to Bob when I get back. Jesus is like, no, you talk to Bob now. Leave it. And you're like, 3 days? 3 days. I got to go back to my hometown. You got to go back to your hometown. Get going, right? The sun's going down. Start the process. This is the picture Jesus is giving us for reconciliation. Be reconciled, he's saying. This is the heart of God. He says, and this is the heart of it. It's like Jesus is saying, I want my kids, my disciples, to love one another. I care more about that than anything they're going to offer me on an altar in worship. And notice the urgency with Jesus. Go find them. Go find them. Do what you can to make amends. You find them on Facebook. You look them up. Haven't seen them in a while, right? You go search them down. The Apostle Paul echoes this urgency to make amends when he writes, do not let the sun go down while you're still angry, and do not give the devil a foothold. Man, the devil loves it when you take your time. You give him a foothold. It's like you give him a little access into your life there. When you let the sun go down, when you wait, when you think you've got a better thing to do for God than to reconcile with your neighbor, he's like, no, that's where the devil gets in. So if you feel like something is off, pursue the person. Just so you know, last week, I made a pretty big caveat around those of you who've experienced physical or sexual abuse. And if you want to hear more of that, you can listen to last week's sermon. And so I want to let you know that there are times where we're not supposed to return to the person who we have a broken relationship with. But what I'm talking about here is that, you know, I'm making up numbers, but 95% of conflict in our life where there's been hurt. And Jesus is saying, call them, text them, set up a meeting, email them, do it quickly. Don't let this stuff fester. Festering like an open wound that's not treated. My younger brother, Nathan, he's my only brother, my only sibling, and he's an amazing musician. When he was 18, he started, well, actually when he was 16, he started playing in bands. I was in a band with him, and anyway, he's been a part of multiple bands, and he's now 42, so he's lived a lot of his life on the road. Well, he hurt his foot years ago. This is about 10 years ago. He hurt his foot somewhere, but he was on tour, and so it's, you know, you can't stop the tour. The show must go on. And so the show must go on, but anyway, the infection was running up his leg, and you know those red streaks when something gets infected? It was coming, you know, up his leg, and so he told me the story. He said, you know, we actually had to stop in Colorado. He lives in Oklahoma, but they had to stop in Colorado, and there was this hospital, and he got treated, and the infection was treated, and it's dangerous. I mean, that's massively dangerous. And so I share that story to say, time is not on your side, right? So we say like, oh, I'll just do it tomorrow, do it next week, do it in a month, you know, and then a week goes by and a month goes by and a year goes by and years go by. And like a leg, like an infected leg, see, the thing is that when there's something off with it, between two of us here in the church, it's weird how the infection can spread. Because even though we try to keep it quiet, there's just ways in which we as humans find out about this. That we get a sense. You get a sense from me that I don't like someone, right? It's how I react when their name is spoken. It's how I roll my eyes in a conversation. You know, it's how I maybe don't bring them up when it was be very obvious to bring them up. And then you pick up on it, right? And then the infection spreads through the body. And Jesus is like, listen, this is not good. Pull into the hospital in Colorado. Get this thing, you got to figure this out. Time is not your friend when it comes to reconciliation or when it comes to a broken relationship. I don't know if you've had this experience, but if I've had this experience where I've held a grudge and I eventually reconcile with someone. And in that meeting, you know, all these meetings don't go well at times, but the ones that do go well, I'm like, wow. You know, I said, I'm sorry. They said, they're sorry. I said, I forgive you. And then you kind of walk away and you feel a lot lighter. And then, embarrassing, if you're like me, I think back into what I used to think about them or think they were thinking about me. And I'm kind of embarrassed. I'm like, wow, I made up a whole dream world of stuff that they thought about me or ways in which I was going to react to them. And I'm kind of embarrassed because that was like much easier than I expected it to be. It's like now I feel great with this person. And I had made up a fake story in my mind about why someone did something or what they were thinking. And I'm sure they meant to hurt me. And it was totally off base. It was totally off base. See, if too much time passes, we begin to create dream worlds that are lies. Time is not a friend when it comes to broken relationships. And I just want to point this out. Conflict is normal. It's normal. I think sometimes we have this idea that conflict is not normal. And when it shows up in our lives, we must be horrible disciples of Jesus, right? And I just want to say, no. Look at Jesus' 12 disciples. They're a mess, right? Jesus is the king of the universe, right? And his little crew, they're a mess, right? They're vying for power, right? There's all kinds of disagreements. And when you look at two of the most famous apostles or, you know, missionaries in the New Testament, it's Paul and Barnabas. Have you heard of those names? Barnabas. They had this massive disagreement. If you read the book of Acts, these two missionaries had served together for years. They have some kind of massive disagreement. Check out the story. It's wild. They're disagreeing over whether to bring this guy named John Mark with them on their next missionary journey. And Paul's like, no, we are not going to bring John Mark. John Mark ditched us when things got hard on our last missionary tour. And Barnabas, his name means son of encouragement. His real name was Joseph, but they call him Barnabas because he's such an encouraging guy. Everybody would love Barnabas. Barnabas is like, give John Mark a chance. Come on, Paul. You know, you're kind of a stick in the mud. Like God's working in John Mark's life. And Paul's like, no, boundaries. Okay? He ditched us. We're not bringing him. And it says they had such a sharp disagreement that they had to part ways. Well, the most beautiful thing is that later on, and I think it's 1 or 2 Timothy, there's this beautiful moment where Paul says, bring John Mark to me. And I want to see him. And there's this seems to be this reconciliation that has happened. But these are followers of Jesus, and conflict's normal. The other, we see conflict is so normal in the New Testament. You know the two names from Philippians, Euodia and Syntyche? If you don't know these ladies, they were leaders in the church. And in Philippians 4, their argument, for some reason, these two ladies did not like each other and they were arguing. Well, too bad for them because their argument has stuck and we've heard about it for 2,000 years. And, you know, you want to go back in time in a little time machine and just say like, Euodia and Syntyche, seriously, you guys got to figure this out because it's going down for 2,000 years that you guys couldn't get along. So go for coffee at the local coffee shop and figure it out because that's how we know you now. That's why you're famous is because you couldn't get along, right? So the reason I bring up these stories is because oftentimes like, oh, we want to go back to being like the early church. And I'm like, ta-da, the early church, here they are. And this was normal. And I just want to say, conflict is normal within the church. I think Jesus is saying, it's how you deal with the conflict. It's how you walk through the conflict. What do you do within it? And so let's not be surprised. Let's not be surprised. I have this experience in my own house of walking around, and I've shared this with you before, but sometimes I'll walk into a room where Tanya is at, or I'll turn a corner and Tanya suddenly sees me, and she jumps and she's freaked out that I'm there. And I'm just like, I live here. And for 20 years now, I've been around. This man has been living where you live. And, you know, her reaction is like, why are you here right now, right? And it's like, I live here. So I think, imagine me in the, so conflict is here, right? It's here. We don't need to be surprised. Don't treat it like a surprise. And I know it's discouraging. We're like, why are we walking through this now? But it's so normal. So how we deal with it is the most important thing. And we know something's wrong when we want to avoid someone, where we can't look them in the eye, or when their name comes up, we're tempted to say something negative. You know, the enemy wants to divide us and to build walls between us. But Jesus has all authority to heal us and through an apology to bring freedom. A friend pointed out to me this past week that it's really interesting that it's our closest relationships, our family and friends, where we experience this often. You know, last week, I think I used the phrase enemy or people we hate or something like that. But in reality, it's often people we love that hurt us the most. It's people close to us that wound us. It's people we've spent a lot of time with who have hurt us and whom we have hurt. And this can cause bitterness to grow. And then bitterness leaks out. And as my friend said this week, emotionally unprocessed hurt leaks. Emotionally unprocessed hurt leaks. This then, over the years, leads to unspoken tension and barriers with people we love. We love them. And so, you know, maybe for you, when I last week was talking about enemies, and you're like, well, I don't really have any enemies. Or you think about people you hate. You're like, well, I don't really hate anyone. Well, maybe just look at people you love and say, okay, how can I apologize to them for my part in hurting them? Remember, step 9 says, may direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. We're not trying to hurt people again. Here's how we hurt others when we try to make amends. I can go up to a guy and say, man, I just need to chat with you. And he's like, okay. And I say, man, I've hated you for years. And I really want to apologize for that. And he goes, what? Really? You've hated me for years? This is new information to me, right? So listen, I just want to let you know, we're not trying to stir up trouble with this series that we're in, okay? I want to ask this, where are the people that absolutely do remember your actions and are longing to hear an apology? Is there someone that's been hurt by you, right? And how can we quickly apologize for our part? And this is truly saying, I'm sorry. Not saying something like, I'd like to meet with you, and I need to let you know, mistakes were made. Mistakes were made. If somebody came to you and said, mistakes were made, did that scratch the itch? John Ortberg gives some good examples of this phrase being used in history. Bad ways to apologize. Here's Henry Kissinger on war crimes committed by the United States in Southeast Asia on his watch. Quote, mistakes were quite possibly made by the administrations in which I served. Mistakes are, it's like robotic. After the U.S. bailed out J.P. Morgan Chase, here's what the CEO said about bonuses paid to company executives. Quote, we know mistakes were made. It's like, what are you, do you know how to communicate as a human being, right? Or here's McDonald's attempting to apologize for not letting vegetarians know their fries were cooked with beef byproducts. Quote, mistakes were made in communicating to the public and customers about the ingredients in our French fries and hash browns. Goodness gracious, right? Mistakes were made. We can do better than that, right? How about this? I'm sorry. I was wrong. Will you forgive me? I'm sorry. I was wrong. Will you forgive me? Hey, let's try it out. Let's practice it together. You ready? Let's say that together. I'm sorry. I was wrong. Will you forgive me? Now, just remember, they're not required to forgive you. You're like, well, listen, Matthew just said, if I apologize, you'd forgive me, right? Bad idea. Don't say that. Don't quote me that way, okay? No. These people, they need time. They need time. And then maybe they won't, right? This is about you and I cleaning our side of the street. But let's also remember, just last week, I talked about the difference, and I want to repeat it this week, on the difference between forgiveness, reconciliation, and restoration. Forgiveness, reconciliation. See, forgiveness is what can happen in me as I think about the cross of Jesus Christ. And whether the person deserves or has asked for forgiveness, it doesn't matter. And whether they're dead or alive, I mean, I can forgive someone else. I can say, listen, I'm letting go of the revenge, of the hurt I want to cause, of the anger, the orge type, deep-seated anger. I'm letting that go. I'm letting it go, and I forgive you. And I don't hold it against you. I mean, you can do that whether the person is dead or alive. And you don't need to kind of go back into relationship with them, right? But maybe there's this opportunity, and that's what we're talking about this week, for reconciliation to happen. So reconciliation is to sit down with someone and say, listen, I'm sorry I hurt you. And maybe they say the same thing back. That would be cool. And there's a sense in which I don't think we're going to be best friends again. And we're good now, but I'll see you in heaven, right? And we're going to put the boundaries down and be like, you're good, I'm good, okay, I'm sorry, you're sorry, okay, bye. And it's done, right? But I think full restoration is also potentially possible. It's a maybe, right? Where two, let's say, best friends fell out, but they become best friends again. Or like a marriage, right? Where you're just on the brink of separation or divorce, and there's a sense of, whoa, okay, there's restoration. There's like, we renew our marriage vows, and there's this commitment to each other and this deep apology. But I just want to just sketch that out to say the difference between forgiveness, reconciliation, restoration has to be part of this. Remember, what is our part, right? What's keeping us from making amends? What's stopping us from apologizing? Remember, Jesus cares more about this than about coming to worship. He says, first go, be reconciled to them, then come and offer your gift. Someone is waiting to hear, I'm sorry, from us. Years of pain and misunderstanding can be healed with a simple, I'm sorry, I was wrong. Will you forgive me? This does not mean that the other person is off the hook, not at all. I'm sure they did some things that have hurt us, but this is not about them. This is about us. So let's do this, North Langley. Step 9, let's make amends. I love Calvin and Hobbes. And in one cartoon, Calvin turns to his friend Hobbes and says, I feel bad I called Susie names and hurt her feelings. I'm sorry I did that. Hobbes replies, maybe you should apologize to her. And Calvin thinks about it for a moment and then responds, I keep hoping there's a less obvious solution, right? I keep hoping there's a less obvious solution. But there is no other solution. It's time for us to apologize. The enemy of our souls has kept us behind walls for far too long. What if the person doesn't want reconciliation? Well, just listen to Romans 12. Paul writes, if it's possible, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. Like I said earlier, sometimes it's not possible, but don't give up. As far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. If there's anything you and I can do, we have to do it. I've been on the receiving end of this, and it feels like love. I want to end with this. I want to end with a little story from my life. And I'm kind of going to flip it and just say I was on the receiving end of an apology. And it really hooks in with the story that I've been telling you throughout the series about an addiction that God had healed in my life from pornography. And when I was in high school in Oklahoma, I was part of a youth group as well as some school trips where a few times some of the teenage boys that I was friends with would watch some things in hotel rooms late at night that was pornographic. And it was exposing me to that world. And years ago, 17 years later, 17 years after high school, I received an email from one of the guys who had chosen to watch this stuff. And I'll call him John. His name's not John. But I'll just read an email that he sent to me. I've read this email before, but I want to share it with you today. Hey, Matthew. So sorry. I've had something on my heart for a long time. Today I was participating in a Bible study where we discuss relationships that either grew or hurt your relationship with Christ. For a long time, I've been concerned with which one I was to you. I fear I was a hurt more than a help. I remember subjecting you to an improper video while on a trip with some other friends. I pray that I did not cause you to stumble or that I didn't plant a seed in you that hurt. If I did, I can't say I'm sorry enough. As a Christian brother, it's important to build each other up. And you were always that friend. I fear I was not. It's been a long time, and I'm sorry to wait this long. But I'm truly sorry for anything I may have done to hurt your relationship with Christ or family. Please forgive me. I wish I could apologize in person, but I just felt led while listening to make sure and contact you today. Anyway, 17 years later, an apology. Man, I'm really proud of him. That takes guts. And I forgive him. And when I got this message, it was a number of years ago. Being on the receiving end is such a liberating feeling. And I wonder how many people need to hear from me this kind of letter. How many people need to hear from Matthew this week? I'm so sorry. I was wrong. Will you forgive me? What could happen in our city when about 1,500 adults walk out of this place and in all their relationships say, I hurt you and I'm sorry. Will you forgive me? What kind of powerful healing could happen in our city, in our day?